Yeah, it's social media, I think, is a huge reason for anxiety for me, but it's also the reason why I am where I am, which is weird.
The Transformative Marks podcast explores how Indigenous tattoo artists, cultural tattoo practitioners, and ancestral skin markers transform this world for the better, dot by dot, line by line, and stitch by stitch. My name is Dion Kazis. I'm a Hungarian, Métis, and Intikapmuk professional tattoo artist and ancestral skin marker. I started the work of reviving my ancestral Intikapmuk skin marking practice over a decade ago, and have helped, supported, and trained practitioners and tattoo artists here on Turtle Island. In this podcast, I sit down with Indigenous tattoo artists, cultural tattoo practitioners, and ancestral skin markers from across the globe, bringing you behind the scenes of this powerful, transformative, and spiritual work.
My name is Poppy Dell. I'm a Cree tattoo artist in Edmonton, Alberta. I'm from Fort McMurray First Nations. That's me.
Awesome. Before we go any further, I was looking at your socials, and I seen you post about your dogs all the time. So tell me about your doggos.
Perfect. That's my favorite subject. I have two English bulldogs, Butters, who is a year and a half now, and he's a giant turd.
Yeah.
He's the baby dog. And then the older one is 9 years old. His name is Sebastian, but we call him Pig. Oh, and Butters is usually called Bum Bum.
Oh, yeah.
Or, yeah, Bumper, Bumper Ruby. He's got all kinds of names. They both do.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I am obsessed with them. They're my life.
Awesome. Yeah, my wife and I have two dogs too. Aspen is our husky, and she's mostly white. And we always, my nickname for her is Aspen the Asshole.
I love it.
Just because when she was growing up, she would tear everything up. Just rip it up and, yeah, like, knives, she would get like, I would have like camping, like legit sharp camping knives in the sink from coming home from camping, and she would somehow get it out of the sink and be chewing on it, like holding the blade down,
oh,
but chewing
God.
The handle, like somehow just figured it out.
And then chasing her to get it.
Yeah. And then we have Beans, and I call him Stinky Beans. He's like 100, and we got him, he was 115 pounds. So yeah.
We are, my dog before Sebastian, I had a boxer named Lennox, but we called him Beans too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's what I was like, oh.
Yep. Beans. We got Beans, a couple years ago now, because our other dog, Rocky, passed. And so my wife called and she's like, started crying on the phone. The lady's, okay, come get him. So we went and got him. Yeah, Beans, he's awesome. He's like just a beast. When we first got him, we were walking on a trail and somebody was riding on their bike and they were like, oh, look at that beast. You know it's a big dog when somebody says that.
That's funny. Everyone's afraid of our dogs, but or not afraid, but when we go walking with them, sometimes people will cross the other side of the street because they're like the big burly flat face guys. they're sweet. They're sweet and they're short.
Yeah, and they're not the
No.
Yeah. But people don't know shit. So mm-hmm. So I just wanted to kind of as we warm up in this conversation, just give you an opportunity to talk about your dad. Sure. You know, read quite a bit about him, as you'd mentioned I should do.
So, yeah, he's the best.
So I just wanted to give you an opportunity to talk about your dad and, yeah.
Yeah. My dad was a professional boxer, until I believe like 1995.
Yeah.
He has some big acclaims. He was the light heavyweight champion of Canada and the heavyweight as well, held them at the same time. And he fought for the world title against Michael Moore, which was a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
He always came out in full regalia to drumming, which was pretty sweet. Dope. Whenever he'd win, I'd hop on his shoulders and he'd carry me around the ring. He was just a big deal, kind of not just in Alberta, but all over Canada for being, Indigenous person to look up to and stuff. And he ended up having like a few boxing clubs for kids in like Mascouches and whatnot. He was a pretty profound individual, I guess, and something to look up to for a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just wanted to give you an opportunity to talk about them.
Yeah, totally.
And maybe just tell us his name.
Oh, his name was Danny Stonewalker. Stonewalker was his Cree name, which he also got in Sweat and Maskwacis.
Yeah.
Apparently, I was there. I was like 8 months, and they asked if I wanted a name at that point, but they were like, eh, she's probably a little too little.
Yeah. Cool.
I wish, though, because I still don't have a Cree name.
Yeah,
one
it's
day.
Coming.
One day,
it's
I know.
Coming.
Yeah,
when it's supposed to, it'll happen.
Yeah,
yeah. It was just pretty cool to be able to watch some of that stuff and see those connections that you had, because I did watch. Yeah, like I said, the little clip, I think CBC or whatever you were talking about when he passed.
Yeah.
And yeah, you told that story of being held up on his shoulders as he was in the ring. So that was pretty cool, and I thought it was important to highlight and bring that forward. And I guess that's one of the reasons why I'm doing this podcast as well, is like highlighting Indigenous folks are doing dope shit. That is another reason, like, hey y'all, if you don't know who Danny Stonewalker is, go check him out. A couple of YouTube videos with him fighting,
it's
pretty awesome.
I actually was just occasionally I'll like look up his name and see if more things come out, because they do over time. And I ended up just getting an original stub from his fight with Michael Moore. I just got, my boyfriend and I found it online, so he got it for me. But it's an original ticket from the original fight. We're going to put it in like a shadow box and have all his stuff on the wall. We've got like the Canadian championship belt that was given to me after he passed, because when he won, you didn't get to keep the belt. But so they gifted me one after he passed, and like just a bunch of other memorabilia. So we want to have like a little section of like this badass box and stuff.
Dope. Yeah. A good way to keep that history there and highlight it. And, you know, because, you know, our youth need people to look up to.
Totally.
You know?
Yeah. Actually, with the belt, a couple of people have asked. I have a girlfriend who works with Indigenous youth in Vancouver, and she asked me to speak with them just about my career next time I'm up there. And she was like, maybe bring the belt. It's like, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Some kids hold that.
Yeah.
For sure.
Big time. And like a little video clip or something.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
So from looking at your socials and reading old articles, I dug up a few old magazine articles before you started into your tattooing. So you've done a ton of different things before tattooing. Do you want to share what some of those things are?
One of my favorite things to tell people is, well, my very first job ever, this is not related to that, but I was a clown. And then a transition of loving clowns and stuff. Used to be a makeup artist, but also as a side hustle, I did kids' face painting at events and stuff like that. So that was one of my favorite past careers, is face painting.
Dope.
No one is more stoked on something that you provide them than a kid getting their face painted.
Yeah.
Like you give someone a tattoo and they're like really happy. Sometimes you get a tear, which is fun. But yeah, when you show a kid and they're just like, I'm a dinosaur. This is the best
pure
thing
joy.
Ever. Yeah. Like sometimes I think of that and I'm like, I should just start doing that again as like a side thing.
Totally.
It was so much fun.
Yeah. Big time.
Yeah. I don't know, but I'm trying to think of like what your
professional makeup artist, hairstylist, and model.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I modeled since I was a kid on and off. But yeah, I was getting more tattooed and being an alternative person. I was tattoo modeling for quite a while, since I was like early 20s. So I did that as a side hustle. And then I did professional makeup for a while for a lot of stuff, and then I went to hair school to kind of further that, because I would do hair as a side, but to get trained for that, I wanted to have more of like a wedding business. Just wanted to be fully rounded with that. But then I got my tattoo apprenticeship as I finished hair school, so I never ended up working in a salon.
Oh wow, that's crazy.
Hey? Yeah.
So I guess the question, why tattooing then?
I guess getting tattooed, I just really liked the process. I started getting tattooed when I was like 19. Lots of my friends ended up being tattoo artists, and then modeling, just being in that kind of I guess, similar realm. But I liked to draw and doodle, and they were always very silly. But then I was like, I'm going to like focus on this and try to get a little better. So yeah, when I was working in Fort McMurray, I on night shifts, my business or my partner, he would let me, excuse me, he would let me just sit in the back and draw all night while he did all the pickings and stuff. So he was like, you're going to be a tattoo artist one day and you owe that to me. But yeah, I just would draw and draw and really enjoy like recreating and realizing that you could draw something and it's not perfect then, but then you keep going back to it, redraw it, and it gets better each time. Because yeah, growing up thinking like, oh yeah, I feel artistic, but then being awful at like oil paintings and stuff like that. Yeah, the ability to yeah, just create and then like work on it until it's what you want it to be. And then I liked the style of neo-traditional artwork is like what I was drawing mostly at that point.
So just rendering, having the strong, bold lines and then rendering it to more realistic than.
Yeah, totally.
Cool. So do you oil paint or
no,
anything?
God, no. My favorite medium is actually pencil, crayon, on wood.
Oh, yeah, cool.
Yeah, I like the ability to make your colors super bold and stuff. And I have ADHD, so slowly watching, like, watercolor, oil painting, all that stuff too. Like I need it to be done now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, pencil crayon is good for me. And then I do digital paintings on my iPad a little as well. I haven't been doing enough, honestly, of like personal artwork. Yeah. I do bead and I sew. And I always feel like having those artistic works, I think that you should always, outside of tattooing, have another artistic niche.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're just going to get bored of what you're working on.
Stagnant.
Yeah, exactly. So I do try to do those kinds of things. And I feel like I'm like pretty creative at home. Like I like tinkering around with things.
Yeah.
And I thrift a lot. I feel like that's an artwork.
Oh, totally. Yeah, being able to find that and digging through everything.
And then hoarding things, being like, this is a future project.
I'm not sure if that's creative, but we'll roll with
it. It's one of my challenges.
So how quick, just thinking about the iPad, how quick were you to pick it up as a tool for tattooing?
I knew some Photoshop and stuff from when I was like modeling and stuff. I tried my hand at photography for a second. I was awful at it. But yeah, with hair school and whatnot, there was some Photoshop, a portion of that. So I had a pretty general idea of it.
Yeah.
So it was pretty easy. Like Procreate is pretty easy when you have that touch of knowledge anyways. Also, when I worked at Capital Tattoo, I worked with a lot of artists that do realism and stuff. So when they need to change things, they would use Photoshop to quickly
layer it.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, just watching them with that, once iPads came around, then I found that it was pretty easy to pick up. And but I did have friends that were not able to pick it up as quickly, so like being able to help was pretty cool too.
Yeah, that's dope. Me, I was like, I was hesitant. You know, just drawing for, but fuck, hand stenciling.
Yeah.
You know, compared
I've
to
I've never
just...
ever done that. Well, I mean, other than if like someone does a walk in and I'm like, here, I'll just scribble it on here. But other than that, I've never like had to do a full hand bombed stencil.
Yeah. Like a mandala that you have to like trace and double over and then stencil.
Yeah. Like folding your like trace paper to make a mandala before, I had to do a lot of that.
Yeah.
And then you'd be like, get to the edge and you're like, that doesn't match up right.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Or if someone wants something changed before the Procreate, someone would come in and be like, oh, well, what if we did that like that? I'd be like, go get a coffee for an hour.
Yeah, exactly.
I need to redraw this stencil.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So having that ability is awesome. When people... because I don't show my drawings until the day of.
Mm.
And some people get a little apprehensive of that because if they want changes. But when I show them how quick I can change something, they're like, oh, but that makes sense.
Plus, if they have too much time, they show like everybody and their dog what it looks like. And
they all
like,
have something to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah,
for
big
sure.
Time.
And then you can't explain, like, because I don't fully render things either. Yeah. So if someone sees it in advance, they're like, well, what does that mean? So it's just so much easier in person to be like, this is what I'm thinking. Let me explain it to you.
So just a line drawing, basically?
Typically, or like I'll throw down like real quick, like select areas and put some color just so that they kind of have an idea. If I've never tattooed someone before, then I'll usually do a little bit more with letting them see what my
like shadows
ideas and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. And now that I'm doing a little more of the traditional style, well, what I base it on,
yeah.
I find that that is easier to color in advance than like a full neo-trad piece, you know? So with those ones, I'll like kind of just put where shadows would be or whatever, but not like a full rendering, yeah. Unless I have a lot of time or the hockey game's on.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, it was kind of cool too. In an old article, you said, "I either want to be a tattoo artist or open a punk beauty salon."
Oh my god!
So it's kind of cool to
see that.
You know that dream of the tattoo artist came true.
That's fun. I feel like I remember what that one was from, but yeah, I also. Back then, before I was in the tattoo industry, I wanted to like put them together as an idea. And now I'm like, no, that would be awful.
Totally different.
Yeah, definitely. But also, that being said, my space here is it's a small studio in like an area with a bunch of collective studios. So I do work around a lot of hairstylists.
Ah, cool.
So in a sense, I'm kind of doing what my dream.
Yeah, there you go. Came true without you having to try.
Yeah, exactly.
So you shared in an interview that reconnecting to your dad and his passing had a big part in you moving your work towards ancestral visual language, specifically beadwork. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah. I mean, I felt getting to be connected with him more the years before his passing really made me more proud of where I come from. And I guess also growing up,
yeah.
I was like more inclined to want to learn more about my history and culture. And I just felt like it just was becoming such a beautiful thing to me that I really wanted to do more in it. So that's why I also started sewing and picking up beading and stuff. And then I was like, how can I incorporate this into my artwork?
Mm.
So I really wanted to, and I talked about it for a while with people. But people only get tattooed what you're showing, right? So I ended up having to, well, not having to, it didn't take much convincing, but I offered my little sister for me to do like a mukluk vamp on her shin. And once I posted that, then it just like came so quick.
Yeah. Well,
but a big part of it was definitely like the reconnection with my dad and just like seeing like the fact that he came out in regalia to his craft, you know, like it just, and then being able to start like, like now I always say like I like to indigenize my outfits while I still consider myself very punk rock. It's fun to like have a mixture of both.
Yeah, totally.
But yeah, it definitely was a progression of the reconnection. And then just as I learned more and realized how inclusive also people can be, because growing up in Fort Mac, there wasn't as much opportunity to learn from others. And now that so many people are connecting to culture again, being able to talk with people and get like advice like, oh, come to this sewing gathering or this, you know, I feel like now as an adult, it's become so much easier to be able to do that. And yeah, and now every client that I tattoo, I learn so much more from, which is also the coolest thing. Yeah.
Yeah. It's such a beautiful reciprocal relationship, you know?
For sure. Yeah.
You gain so much from the folks that you spend time with and visit. Yeah.
I feel like at home, I'm constantly being like, oh, my client told me the other day, or oh, this client said something. Like a lot of the things that I know are just based on my full conversations with my clients. And then I get to, I don't know, have all this extra knowledge of things I probably wouldn't have known anyway. So
yeah, it's such a blessing. Hey?
Yeah. To be able to visit. It really is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then also being invited to like, I've been invited to sweats with clients, or I've had clients offer me to like go berry picking in their neck of the woods when the time comes and things like that. So yeah, having those connections, like I have more friend clients now than I ever did in my career before. Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's awesome.
All their names in my phone. Yeah. Yeah. Some people are like, why do you give people your phone number? I'm like, they're not abusing it. Like,
yeah, definitely. You know? Yeah, that's cool.
Like, all my clients have my phone number.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, yeah, cool. Yeah. Yeah, it's actually funny that you said that, because my next thing was talking about understanding that you recruited your sister to get that first teamwork piece. And the reason I highlighted that, because it's, you know, mirrors my own experience,
okay.
You know, like my sister is always the one who's like, yeah, I'm good.
Yeah.
You know, she's actually been part of some of the Indigenous tattoo schools that I've done.
Oh, cool.
And the funniest story is one of my early students was doing a skin stitch. So for people who don't know what skin stitch is, you have a needle and thread. You dip the thread in and it goes underneath the skin for a couple of millimeters. Then you bring it out and you pull it all the way through and you create a tunnel filled with ink. And so she was in the middle of a stitch. And she was like, oh, I can't do this. And so the needle is there stuck in my sister's skin. My sister's like, yeah, that's okay. You have it. You know, all encouraging. So my sister was like, you know, is dope and was able to help bring her through, coax her through being able to teach. So shout out to sisters for all the things that they do. Yeah. 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 My sister, you know, I'll be like, oh, well, somebody's coming to do a photo shoot or somebody's coming to do an article. Can I tattoo you? And she's always like, yep, I'm
cool.
In.
Yeah.
So yeah, just wanted to highlight that.
Bring I love it forward. That. Yeah. That's solid for sure. I have a similar, well, not really, but when I first moved to Edmonton, my boyfriend at the time was a piercing apprentice, and I guess because I find the thought of getting skin stitching so petrifying, but that's because one of my clients told me it was the worst experience of her life. Not worst experience, most painful experience. But yeah, she's super proud of it, but I wonder if I could go through it.
Mm.
I'm a baby when it comes to getting tattoos. but I yeah, so the boyfriend at the time, he needed to learn to pierce, but before going to an actual piercing, they would take like the, I don't even know what they are. I'm not a piercer. But like the littler needles. And so he needed to practice. So I went in and he did a bunch on my arm. And then I was just like, okay. But then when he pulled them out, then I had to look away.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know. Similar experience. The piercer at the first shop I worked at was learning how to do dermals.
Okay.
And so she was like, can I try it out? So I had like two right here. And then like, yeah, when she went to take them out, not the coolest.
No,
experience.
You got it done and taken out in the same day?
No. I let them heal for, you know, 6 months or something. And then, yeah, she took them out and it was like, not cool. But I would say skin stitching, you know, my friend Lane Wilkin, who hand tapped this, he's Filipino. And he, so we did a trade. He tapped this and I skin stitched his leg.
Okay.
And when I was done, he was like, oh, dude, your ancestors are so cool. Because he's like, in terms of pain, he's like, stitch, tap, hand poke the machine.
Yeah.
Right. So
yeah.
It was pretty cool. And I would say it's more the visual that people get tripped out about. It's like, whoa, that shit's going under there.
Yeah.
Because you think once it goes under the skin, those nerves are not there.
Yeah.
Because
true.
It's on the surface of the skin. So you're doing that.
How deep is it? You said
same as machine.
Okay.
Yeah. Same as machine.
How are you gauging that? Like, I guess like a piercer would, but like, are you pinching it or like?
It's just under and through, and you know,
require
you would
one hand or two hands.
Two,
okay,
definitely two. And you could, you know, that was one of the things, because I taught myself on my own leg.
Okay,
right, because there was nobody when I started it doing it. You know, there's a couple like white dudes doing it, and I reached out, and they just didn't say nothing, right?
I've actually reached out to people in the past too about like things like that, or like, hey, you want to trade some knowledge? But no one ever writes back.
Yeah, nobody's like, nah, crickets, right? And so I was like, oh, I can do it because I already knew how to use a machine.
Yeah.
So when you go underneath, you know, that's too deep. That's going to blow out.
Yeah.
Or, you know, that's not going to, you know, it's not deep enough.
Is that the one?
Yeah, yeah, right here. You can see this is a thick ass line. So when I first started, I just grabbed whatever needle, threw it in the autoclave, and sterilized it. So it's super big. And it was one of those needles that has the bump on the end.
Oh, God.
And so I pull it. I'm like, nope. 4 stitches with that note. And so you can see they kind of get smaller and smaller.
So you're doing it already using the string as well?
Yeah, string is what holds the ink.
Okay.
And so, yeah, if you just did with just the needle without the thread, it wouldn't.
Yeah.
You wouldn't get
it
any pigment.
It can't hold it like the tube holds the.
Yeah.
That makes
fun.
Sense.
Yeah. Hey, it was. Yeah, my wife took a video. I don't show it very often because I'm sitting in my underwear in the shop trying to stitch myself.
That's funny. Well, you should send it to me at some point. Yeah. I'd love to see. I'm doing it to yourself to learn. That's badass. I tattooed my own knee and, well, I've tattooed myself a couple of times, but tattooing my own knee was brutal.
Yeah, I did this blackout.
Yeah. You can only tattoo your lower legs pretty much.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Once you get up here, it's just too awkward. Yeah. The angle's weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, funny story. I tattooed myself when we had our closure during TikTok when we had our closure during COVID on TikTok.
Yeah.
There we go.
I got it.
And so I'm tattooing myself and I was like answering questions at the same time. So it took extra long. That's probably why it hurt so bad. But a bunch of people were like, you're not supposed to be tattooing right now. I was like, I'm tattooing myself. Like, also in my home, but it was clean. And I got a lot of guff for that. But most people were really, really sweet. But yeah, just tattooing myself. Everyone was like, you know, tattooing's not supposed to be going on right now. I was like, I think this is fine.
You're like, look again, actually.
Yeah.
Plus, besides, you look at half the fucking conventions and dirty ass shit everywhere. Not talking about any convention in particular, but so what is your design process when it comes to ancestral designs?
Ooh. Well, at the beginning, I just would look up different different artworks by like as traditional as I could get to newer people and just kind of seeing like what I could pick up was their process or what parts of the design were important, like the line weights and things like that. But now that I've kind of honed in on what's more my style, because I feel like I have my own style that is really reflective of that, but also I feel like it's still very much a poppy tattoo.
Yeah.
So at first I just read through, I have this beautiful app that my assistant has for me and she breaks it down perfectly for someone with ADHD.
Yeah.
So I look at their sample pictures. She always only puts like the top ones in it. And then just what they're looking for, if they have like a specific tribe that they're wanting to have it based off of. And then, yeah, once I get an idea of like what it's supposed to look like, I really just think about it. Like I'll read something maybe in the morning and think about it all day and like kind of give myself an idea of what I want to do different or what I liked about old pieces or if they had something.
Yeah.
And then when it comes down to drawing it, it's a matter of just scribbling out my spots and then, yeah, fixing it up. But a lot of the process is really thinking about it.
Mm.
I like plan out the location of the body because I really pride myself in my tattoo background and my tattoo background. My first teachings were to every part of the body has rules and the flow and location and the direction of things have spots that they're supposed to be in and whatnot. So I keep looking at that friggin' light. but yeah, so I when I'm designing, I just really think about the location and go from there. Because sometimes people also will write and be like, oh, I'll have it on my neck, on my arm, or on my leg. But I'm like, I need us to make a decision so I can plan this drawing.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I totally get that. Because your style with the beadwork specifically is, simplified down. So you're not doing like 800 beads for, a palm size. You're doing 150, right?
Yeah. And so. Oh, God. I thought it was smaller, but I counted one piece I did and I was like, I'm going to count in my head and see. And I counted two berries and it was 120. And I was like, I'm not counting it.
Yeah, exactly.
I actually have an idea too. I want to maybe do a giveaway, but I don't. Like, I've never done one, so I have to plan it. But I thought it would be fun to do, like, a video of a piece and have it be, like, a jelly bean counting contest, but of my beads. Yeah, but I'd have to count them first, so.
Yeah. Totally. That sounds like a good giveaway.
Yeah, that's
cool.
But.
So how did you come up with that, instead of just rendering, say, like, the stitch, the patch, people do the patches.
Yeah.
It looks like a Donald Duck patch, rendering
totally.
Every detail and everything.
Yeah.
You're more taking the structure of.
Yeah, exactly. I think the what led there is, like, if you look back at my old work, I've always done really pretty things, and I always had pearls dripping in them. So those pearls are beads. And I was like, well, what if I do that idea? And I've been doing that forever. And the way that I shadowed and highlighted them, but making that the bead. But I also was like, if I do each row, that's just potentially over time going to bleed together, not be as legible, because I wanted to not include the black for this style, unless it was a black bead. But I wanted to, like, use those colors as their shadow and use the white highlight as the reflection. So I figured if I did all that together, one day it might look like a weird birthmark or something. So separating them for longevity, I thought was the best plan. So far, everyone that's come back has been pretty bang on. So, and then I have done a couple where instead of rows of beads in between, I've done some color. So that would be like where, like, the hide would be typically or whatever. excuse me. So I've done some of that, and I do like them too, but the ones that really seem to punch the best are having the separation and the skin.
Well, skin, yeah. Yeah. It just helps to, what's that?
I smacked my mic.
Oh, that's we're using this one pretty cool. Much. So, yeah. And I guess that's really speaks to the training that you have as a tattoo artist and the mentorship that you got teaching those rules and lessons, and also tattooing for as long as you've tattooed, being able to make those decisions in terms of design and longevity. So that's pretty cool. I guess I never asked, how long have you been tattooing, and what was that journey to be a tattoo artist?
I started tattooing in, I don't know the year, but it'll be 9 years in October. Actually, that's when I started at the shop. I tattooed at Capital Tattoo. That's where my apprenticeship is from. That's here in Edmonton, under Jessica Wright, or she's Jack Essica Wright on Instagram. And yeah, the process was pretty cool. My first weekend, she took me to the Calgary convention and was just like, "Hey, talk to people, get to know the industry. We'll make some friends and just, like, watch us tattoo a bit." So that was fun. Just, like, talking about tattoos, getting to tell people no one had any time. But yeah, so then after that, it was just getting to know the shop, getting to know the cleaning protocols, and having homework. So it was just like, here's this. Actually, one of my friends, Katie, came up with this idea. She didn't work at the shop. She was just there all the time. So they made a jar where there would just be, like, random things in it. And it was called Pop Quiz Hotshot. And I would have to pull out of there and draw whatever was on it. So that was fun. Just lots and lots of drawing and, yeah, getting to know how to, like, take care of everything, keeping, like, yeah, doing bloodborne pathogens, things like that. And then after, like, 6 months, I believe it was. Oh, and, like, parts of the machine, all that. I think it was after, like, 6 months, then she, I had been doing her, like, setup and tear down. Then I came in one day and I was allowed to tattoo a banana. Yeah. Yeah. So just things like that. We, like, slowly progressed up. I think banana was my first. And then one of the guys did a tiny portrait of, Clint Eastwood on an orange, and he did half, and now he's like, now do you do the other half? And I actually did a pretty good job. He might have looked like he was half zombie, but then we peeled that off, and I think Jess still has that at her shop. And then just, like, fake skin, all that stuff, and then I think it was after a year is when I started tattooing people. Right now I'm using the Good Pen by Good Guy. Yeah, it's really cool. I believe they're coming out with, like, a actual or, like, a full wireless one, but this one's a battery pack. My business partner, I think she has a Cheyenne, but yeah. Just seeing her, like, sometimes she'll just, like, walk around the bed and, like, tattoo from over here, and I'm like, I do want to ditch the cord. So yeah, so I got the Good Pen. It's a really good machine, and I love the guys at Good Guys, so I went and was playing around with the stuff that they had, and yeah, so I've got that one. Before that I was using the Zion, and I had one Right Stuff. It was called the Hornet. That one was a pretty good one. I got that from Northern. But yeah, I've my last three machines. Oh, also, I break everything. Oh. I'm a tornado. So yeah, I treat my things not the best. So I go through them pretty quickly. But yeah, my last three machines have been pens. Before that, I was all Neotets. Yeah.
Yeah. No. I know Rob and Cam from Good Guy just because the shop I worked at and where I grew up actually is where Good Guy Supply is in Salmon Arms. So
yeah, I love Rob and his wife Natalie.
Yeah, Rob did this right sleeve, which I'm gonna get blacked out, but
that's fun. Get him to do that.
Yeah, one of my friends will. But yeah, no. So I know who they are.
And, yeah, awesome.
Dope guys.
They're the best people. Have you ever done the Kelowna convention?
No, I haven't done Kelowna. Partly because I lived in Salmon Arms, so it's just real close.
Yeah.
Right?
The convention itself is so fun.
Oh yeah.
And Rob, like, it makes it such an event for the artists. Like, there's food and there's like an event every night. And I feel like I make the most friends there.
Yeah.
But the first day is the best, the Thursday before it starts, because he rents like a pontoon boat and takes you all out all day. It's really great.
Dope.
Yeah. Yeah. I really love that convention.
Yeah, I'll have to. I haven't been doing lots of, I don't even know how to say it, like Western conventions. Mm-hmm, a lot of the stuff I do is Indigenous events and stuff.
Yeah, makes sense.
So New Zealand and Samoa and all that type of stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, probably time to start moving back in that direction.
They're fun.
Yeah, totally.
I just love making friends.
Yeah, dope. Yeah, 100%.
It's more about like the friendship than tattooing and like in a lot of places like that. But it is really nice because like, I'm doing the Winnipeg one this year as well, and I booked up so fast because, like, people that, like, in that area, they don't want to come to Edmonton. Like, it's a little far, so being able to head out that way, I do that one once a year as well.
Yeah, you know, that's what I've been – well, some Indigenous tattoo artists have a bit of a challenge when they go to some of the Western conventions.
Okay.
And a lot of times I just share with them, you know, just remember that you're there for those people.
Yeah.
You know, the community.
Yeah.
Because I always end up, whenever I'm at a convention, all the Indians end up around
Totally.
And so, yeah, I always say, you know, that's really why you're there, is to serve those people from that community.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
My partner came to one with me last year, and it was nice because the people would be like, oh, is she Native? And then he'd be like, yeah, like we're from whatever. And it was like nice to like listen and look up and be like, hey, where are you from? And like just like having that normal, like how we interact with each other at like, like a Westernized event. It was fun. It's just like, yeah, it's good feeling.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it's kind of funny because I always say, yeah, all the Natives find me, because even when we were in New Zealand at the New Zealand Tattoo and Arts Festival in Tauranga, the a Mi'kmaq lady came in, so a Native from here, from Canada, rolled up and was like, hey. And so I hand-poked her grandma's peaked cap design on her arm.
Oh, cool.
Right? So they found us, and then her friend came with her drum and flute. And the Bronahan was there, and we did like a little round dance in the middle of the convention. Because all the Maori folks were there and all the Indigenous folks from across the world. So it's pretty cool to do that. And then actually, I had just moved to Nova Scotia when I went to that convention. So when I came back, she was like a couple hours away.
Yeah, and she'd come. That's cool. You made a connection on the other side of the world or whatever. Yeah. That's cool that you do things like that outside of Canada. Like I think of traveling a little in the States and stuff, like, because the Jay Treaty stuff would, I'd have the ability to, but yeah, I like to go all over like you do. It's really cool. I get nervous about stuff like that, though.
Why? What makes you nervous?
Well, like, what if I don't pack everything? Or like, I've not been here before.
People help.
Yeah.
Everybody's there to support.
Yeah. That's cool. I get nervous from everything.
Oh, yeah.
You can tell that, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah, no, everyone, you know, especially with those Indigenous conventions, we went down to Aotearoa, to New Zealand, in September and October for a 10-day festival and then 3-day convention, all Indigenous artists from all over. So it's pretty dope to be able to check out, and everybody's there to help you succeed and lift you up. You know, it's like really actually a transformational experience. From my experience, is like, you know, not to sound not appreciative for the non-Indigenous folks in my life, but when you roll up to those spots, you're like, these are my people.
Yeah,
you know, not putting anyone down, but yeah, just that feeling of like, yeah, I'm home.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, it's like a family feeling for sure.
Totally, yeah. So the next question I had was, you know, you do a fair number of guest spots and conventions, you know, how has that been and what impact has it had on your work?
Well, I guess because the shop that I started at, they really enjoy doing the conventions because that's, you know, how you get your name out there a little more and make buds in the industry. And that's helpful for going to other places to tattoo and stuff. So that's kind of like how I started. I've always done that. So, yeah, I feel like just that's why I feel that I have a following in like Manitoba and in BC and stuff is because of getting out there and doing things in other shops. But I also feel like when I come back from stuff like that, my work always grows because seeing other people and just like feeling more inspired. I always tell people, you want to get tattooed for me after I come back from somewhere. That's when I'm on fire.
Yeah, definitely. And you appreciate how convenient it is that all your shit's right there.
Totally. It's like I'm not looking around for an hour trying to set up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what I always tell people, all my students and people I mentor, is like, if you think it's going to take an hour, book two.
Yeah.
Right. Because part of that's setting up or, you know, going to the bathroom when it's on the other side of the convention floor. Yeah. And yeah. So just extend what you think it's
exactly
going to be.
Yeah.
That way,
and like
stressed.
The stencil machines are going to break or.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. There's always some problems. So you've always got to at least book some allotted time in case there's like some lap over between clients.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Because I did that, I think, the first couple conventions I did, and it was just so stressful, right? Yeah.
Like, come back in 30 minutes. No, come back in 30 more.
Yeah, exactly. No, come back in another hour.
Yeah. What's tomorrow look
yeah,
like?
Exactly. Sorry to ask you that one about the machines. Yeah, I totally, absolutely. What would you say? This quote resonates with me. You said it can be a bummer when you're done tattooing someone.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. When you spend your time with someone, you see them every 3 weeks, 4 weeks, whenever you see them, whenever they can come in and then you finish a project, you're like, well, you want to book something else? You want to meet up?
Yeah.
Like, totally. You know, you just exchange so much of yourselves and, yeah, when you're done, it's like, oh, that's really sad because it's such a fun experience and like I said, you exchange so much. So, yeah, I like for an example, I tattooed a friend, is a friend now, but we did a whole sleeve on him and I often talk about how that's one of my favorite sleeves. And so I think about that one a lot because people ask what my favorites are. And then he just booked in for a second sleeve.
Dope.
So now I get to have that experience.
Get
again.
To hang out.
Yeah.
No, I totally resonate with that, you know, doing a lot of bodysuits, bigger projects, sleeves, backs, all of that type of stuff. And so you spend 100, 120 hours with somebody, you know, just bullshitting around, hanging out. It's like, oh, I don't get to see you in the next couple of months. Like, you know, it's totally, it's sad. And actually, I just finished a piece here where it's a double sleeve and across the front and back, chest and back piece, upper back. And my collaborator was like, I'm excited, but sad.
Yeah.
You know, because
like, let's do a touch up every month.
Yeah, exactly. Just hang out.
Yeah.
So it just came to mind when you think about that, is there any difference between your Indigenous clients and the non-Indigenous clients, or is it pretty much across the board?
It's mostly across the board, I'd say. Yeah, I feel like I connect with all of my clients, but I also always feel like, do you ever notice tattoo artists like draw people in that are very similar to them?
Yeah, big time.
Like I've always noticed that at the old shop when someone would walk in, I'd be like, that's so-and-so's client. That's so-and-so's client.
Oh, yeah,
just guessing. Because you can like, so yeah, like I feel like I have a connection with most of my clients because of that. Like,
yeah, big time.
Or I think that you're kind of, you draw them in, the people that are similar to you.
Yeah.
So yeah, I do connect with most of my clients, but But yeah, I do feel like sometimes at the end of a day, I like have no voice left from all the big anti-laughs with my indigenous clients.
Yeah, totally.
Like the whole building's probably like, oh, that's a laughing day. Like it just gets real loud in there.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. That's also the experience. I think it was somebody was coming in to get some, you know, ancestral work. And one of the artists was like just giggling around and, you know, being maybe a little bit rude. And they were like, oh, somebody's getting this super meaningful tattoo and we're joking about this over here.
Yeah.
You know? But it's like, whatever. That's just what it is. You know, that's part of the joy of those spaces.
Yeah.
You know, is just the different people. And I always enjoy it because I always say the other artists who are non-Indigenous in the shop that I work at, they get an education.
Yeah.
You know, because we're always talking about colonization, you know, the Indian Act and all that shit. And, you know, I tattoo a lot of professors and, you know, professional Indians. And everybody's like, holy shit. My client leaves and they're like, I didn't know that. And I was like, oh, what was that? What are we talking about?
Totally. Yeah. It's just me and one other person in my shop. So now that you mention it, she must know a lot of stuff.
Yeah, totally.
Because we get to talking about a lot and, yeah, and same goes. Like, so many of my clients are such professionals.
Yeah.
And, like, I love when they come in their, like, work attire and, then they're, like, full sleeves. And,
totally.
It's cool.
So in an Instagram post, you mentioned that many of your clients feel, especially with the beadwork and the ancestral visual language that you're using, that they feel that this work is a type of ceremony. Can you talk about that a little bit?
I feel like it depends on the piece, but like when things are very sentimental, like say it's a piece of beading that came from someone's Japan or something and they've been wanting something like this for so long, when they get it and like the things we talk about and also the physical and emotional pain of getting the tattoo, I feel like coming out when you're finished, they just feel this like joy and like they've just gone through ceremony, I feel.
Yeah, you know, when I think of that word ceremony, I think of it as a process of building a relationship with something, you know. You're going through that ceremony to be more connected to it.
Yeah.
And so when I think of Indigenous clients specifically, a lot of times we're disconnected from who we are as our Indigenous community, our identity and our indigeneity. And so that tattoo is a ceremony to get to know ourselves better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
That's a really good way to put it. You're good with words.
Oh, yeah. Probably why I'm talking to people. and you can pick this one up or not pick it up. In a past article, you talked about the fear and anxiety of people being judgmental. That, I believe, was in connection to modeling. Today, what is that anxiety about?
I guess the same thing. Yeah, I'm always – that's why I, like, am awful at posting on social media, because I'm like, people are going to zoom on this. They're going to pick it apart. Like, it's just what – I've seen people do it. I've done it myself. So, like, the judgment is, like, my biggest anxiety, I'd say. But it – that's, like, why I have to – I don't go on social media very often. I have to be like, okay, we need to make a post. It's been a minute.
Or,
it's social media, I think, is a huge reason for anxiety for me, but it's also the reason why I am where I am, which is weird. Because, like, I started modeling and, like, got more jobs because of posting on social media. I got a bigger following because of social media, which got me my tattoo apprenticeship. And I have a following now, which gets me 100% of my clients.
Yeah.
Like, everything is through social media. So as much as it, like... it's like a high, high, a low, low.
Big time. I totally, you know, I can resonate with that for sure in terms of my own experience. I just don't fuck with social media that much anymore.
Yeah. You know?
I guess it'll be more once this stuff starts coming out. But
gonna have to.
But for me, it's just, it's that balance between sharing yourself and then also, exposing yourself, putting yourself out there. And I would just say that, you know, less people I would argue, and of course, this is probably controversial for some folks, but I don't think we're actually living those ancestral teachings, you know, of care and compassion and for bringing people in instead of calling people out.
Yeah.
You know, I've said it a couple times now with other folks I've been chatting with is we sit in a circle because everybody's voice counts, you know, and there's actually the teaching behind this tattoo, which is on my neck, which is a Maori rendition of the Four Food Chiefs story. And it talks about, you know, fly being the most important voice and sometimes the most annoying voice. Because, of course, fly, get out of here, you know, come on, get out of here. Fly, the most annoying voice sometimes is the most important voice. And so, yeah, I just think I would encourage people to reach back into their own teachings, their ancestral stories to find those ethical considerations.
Yeah.
Because I don't think the things that we're living by today, especially as Indigenous folks, are rooted in those things. I think they're rooted in Western philosophical traditions, which that shit was imported. So, you know, look at the shit you're spouting and living by.
Yeah. Yeah, fair.
Yeah.
I got a bunch of kids' books. Maybe I'll like go back and read all those for some posy vibes.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I had a thought, but now it's escaped me.
Yeah, that happens lots. Like, thinking away, and then you're like, oh yeah, that's a good...
Wait, what?
What was that thing? It's ran away. That's all right. So now, how do you deal with some of that anxiety, and what is your process of dealing with it?
A few things. I've always been into like Indigenous medicine type things. So I do make a lot of teas and things for people when they're in a way
for different
things going on. Like my partner gets bad tummy, I make him something, or someone's feeling stressed, I make them something. So I was doing that a lot for myself before, but there became a point when you can't, like I always say, there's not enough lavender to smell anymore. Yeah. I have to be medicated.
Yeah.
So I'm on medication for a lot of things.
Yeah.
Which helps a lot. Yeah. Right now I'm on the lowest that I can be for my anxiety, which feels really good.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure coming off is an option.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I find that and just, yeah, my dogs.
Yeah.
My dogs are a huge help for when I'm, or when I'm feeling away, being outside now that it's getting nice again, just walking outside without shoes on.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Big time.
Yeah. Just, just things to like ground you, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I appreciate you sharing that with me, you know.
Of course. I'm pretty open about my mental health. So
yeah,
it's fine.
No, that's good. Yeah, that's also one reason why I asked it, because, you know, on your social media, you are open about it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be like,
yo. heard you got some stuff going on.
Yeah.
No, I think it's important. A lot of people personal message me and thank me for how much I'm opened with those things, because I've in my journey with my own mental health, I have tried things that didn't work and tried things that have. And, you know, like I feel like not talking or people not talking about those things has been like why there's sometimes a stigma around it. Whereas like, I don't care. I got stuff going on and I want to feel good. So I'm going to talk about it to maybe help other people feel good.
Yeah, no. And I think when I think about that, you know, I would say that that is a form of courageousness, being able to be a little bit vulnerable and let people know what's going on. That's really good. And I think, you know, one of the good reasons why having you on here is important,
you know,
not everybody shares it and it's open about it. So yeah, props to you, just holding you up for that.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Were you thinking you were going to say something?
I was going to, but it left again. Oh, I was going to tell you something that I'm going to try for also anxiety stuff, but I've had it for like a month and I haven't done it yet. But Vancouver has like one of the first psilocybin dispensaries now. So I got their like entry level things to see if it helps. But they promised that I wouldn't get high because I've never tried that. Yeah. But it's been sitting there and I'm like, okay, on a day that I don't work, I will try one. But she said people take like a bunch of them. But it's something I might try to improve mood. And they also had some that she recommended that will help with drawing.
Oh, yeah. Dope. Yeah. No, I've heard a lot of friends and colleagues who, you know, use for their anxiety, depression, you know, some of the scientific studies around the ability to rewire some of those circuits in your brain. Like, yeah, fuck, why not?
Yeah. And I asked in a post on Facebook, because again, I talk about everything. And so many people responded and every single comment was good.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, well, I'll try one day, but I haven't yet. So I'll let you know how it goes.
It's pretty jacked up that it's just most of that shit's still illegal too, though.
Yeah. It's what natural. Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, when you think about the health benefits for it, you know,
mm-hmm.
Like what?
Yeah. Big pharma.
Totally. So I thought it was funny that in one of your early articles, the ones I mentioned about opening a punk beauty salon or becoming a tattoo artist, in a recent article or interview, you said that you have a dream of opening an Indigenous tattoo studio. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, my direction, I guess, has changed a little. I would still say it would be a reflection of me as a person, but indigenized. Yeah. I would like to open a space and not have it just Indigenous people tattooing there.
Yeah.
I would like to have a bigger space. I love working with just them, but I do miss being around a little more people. So eventually the goal is to have just a space that I want to have like a monthly Indigenous art showcase kind of thing. So it would be like a spot that you could come by and be like, I wonder who's showcased. And it would be like, oh, this month is this beater, or this month is a person who sews, and then have, if any sales were made from it, 100% go to them. Mm. But a way to talk more about Indigenous art, as well as like, I create things not as often as I should, but like have a space to have those things available, because my space right now is very little.
Just
like indigenize the industry up a little bit, know?
Yeah, and make it more visible and take up a bit more space.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this podcast isn't coming out probably till the new year. So, you know, I've been thinking for a long time doing a similar type of thing and having an art gallery that's, you know, just kind of have friends who do their art all across the world. So some Maori stuff, some Northwest Coast, Haida, Tlingit, you know, some Anishinaabe artists, you know, just pack it with Indigenous stuff and probably invite, you know, guest artists to come in from Samoa and Fiji and Tahiti and, you know, across Turtle Island. And because I always get requests like, hey, can you do this Indigenous tattoo? And it's like a Samoan tattoo or a Maori tattoo. I'm like, yo, I'm not Samoan and I'm not Maori. So
I don't understand
I can't do that. So, you know, bringing somebody in. But if I had a shop where it was like, yo, wait 6 months and Amari is coming to do that work and we can book you in, you know, bringing those Indigenous artists.
Connections all over.
Yeah. Bring it in here and highlight the work that we do.
Totally. Yeah. I love that.
Hey there, listeners. It's Dion Kazas, your host from the Transformative Marks podcast, where we dive deep into the world of Indigenous tattooing, ancestral skin marking, and cultural tattooing. If you found value in our episodes, we've made you laugh, or you've learned something new, consider showing your support by buying me a coffee on Ko-Fi.com. Ko-Fi is this incredibly creator-friendly platform where you can support me directly for just the cost of a cup of coffee. No subscriptions, no hidden fees, just a simple one-time gesture that goes a long way in keeping me on the air. Plus, Ko-Fi doesn't take a cut, so every penny goes directly into improving the podcast. From updating equipment to visiting with new guests as I go into recording season 2. So if you like what you hear and you'd like to help me keep the lights on, head over to my Ko-Fi page, www.ko-fi.com/transformativemarks. The link is in the show notes.
And then they can go to your shop and then come this way to mine.
Totally. Do a tour.
Yeah.
Set up a tour.
Yeah.
Package.
Yeah.
Holiday package.
Yeah. We'll be like, and then and here's the sights.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's just a fun little quote that I got from one of your old, I think it was a modeling article.
Okay.
It says, maybe one day I'll be a super awesome tattooer.
I can't believe you found these things. It's so funny. I love it. That's cool. I said that.
Yeah. And I guess I brought that up just to lift you up and
that's cute.
To share that I think that day has arrived.
No.
And you're a super awesome tattooer.
I love
so
that.
So just lifting you up and being able to, what would you say, celebrate your achievement.
Yeah, totally.
Because I think that's the way that we rise together as Indigenous folks, is lifting
reflection
each other
up. And lifting each other up. But yeah, totally. That's cool. That's funny.
Do you have any other thoughts or questions or ideas that come up from our conversation or, anything you want to ask me or whatever?
I don't know. Nothing that's like shooting off the top of my head. When I first got here, I was like going to ask you a bunch of questions. And then I was like, this is his podcast. I don't need to interview him, but. Yeah.
You can if you have anything that came up. I'm totally down.
Well, you've talked about how you were tattooing before you kind of incorporated more of your Indigenous things. How long have you been in the industry?
So I started tattooing in 2009.
Okay.
And then shortly thereafter, it was actually Rob's shop that I went into and I was getting work done on the sleeve and I was sorting through all the tattoo magazines, because a lot of shops have stacks of magazines over. I was just sorting through and I was like, same old shit. And there was this little pamphlet. And it's called Tattooing Face and Body Painting of the Thompson Indians. And the Thompson Indians is one of the names that was given to us as Intlacutmuk people. So we use Intlacutmuk as our ancestral name for ourselves. Okay. And this booklet, I was like, what the fuck? Like our ancestors had tattoos. And I always say that my head just about popped off because I didn't know. I didn't realize that nobody talked about it.
Yeah.
And so... I was working in the bar industry, a bouncer, bartender, all that shit at the time. So I was just like, that's cool. I could do master's research on that. I didn't have an undergrad. I wasn't in a master's degree. So I don't know why I was like, hey, I can do a master's.
Straight to it.
Yeah. And so, life went another direction for a while. And then I got in, I think that was around 2006. And then 2009, I started, I went back to get my undergrad. And I was in this class called Indigenous Historical Perspectives, taught by my mentor, Margot Temez. So shout out to Margot, you're dope. I was like, she was like, find something you're interested in historically and research it. And so I was like, oh, I remember that magazine. Of course, I didn't write it down. I didn't write the author. I didn't write anything. I just knew it was about our tattoo.
Yeah.
And so I found it eventually and I wrote an article on it, wrote a paper on it. It was pretty cheesy now when I look back at it, but, it was the beginning of that research. And so after I started my apprenticeship, I started doing that research more and more and more till 2012 is when I first stitched my own leg.
Oh, okay.
And so I got what's called an undergraduate research award. And that whole summer I went to the museums. I went out on the land looking at the pictographs, looking at the baskets, doing all that work. And I was like, realized the power of the revival of Indigenous tattooing, because I researched what was happening in New Zealand with the Maori folks and then with L. Frank and the ladies with the 1111s in Southern California. And, L. Frank says that in her experience getting her facial markings, it was like reaching hands across time and holding hands with her past aunties, grandmas, great grandmothers, right? And she says that, or they say that the youth today are like seaweeds without roots. and that our tattooing is like roots for those youth so they can stand there in the turbulent waters of the colonial project.
Wow.
And so for me, I was like, fuck, you know, I know how to tattoo. Mm-hmm. I know that we had tattooing and I know the power of it.
Yeah.
And so I was like, time to do that. So I went and stitched my own leg, hand poked it.
That's from that time?
Yeah.
Okay.
From that. That was like 2012. The end of the summer of 2012, sitting in the shop, my mentor, Carla Romanuk, so big shout out to Carla. She's now sold that shop,
but okay. Yeah,
still got a shout out to her.
I love that.
And then, yeah, just started doing that work and, you know, moving into more bigger work, so bodysuit sleeves, because I felt uncomfortable about doing more, what would you say, like the smaller designs that mm-hmm. we would have done traditionally mm-hmm. and sharing it with non-Intlakatmuk, non-Indigenous folks. Mm-hmm. And so I developed this larger work because, of course, you can look at it and you can be like, that's
cool.
Intlakatmuk, you know, that's Indigenous. But us, we can look at it and go, oh, well, that's not traditional or that's not ancestral. So
okay.
that when we roll up and I see a smaller piece on somebody who's from my community or community that's connected, I'll be like, ah, you're Intlakatmuk or you're Siilkh or
okay.
you know, Shwetmuk, you know?
So yeah.
just starting to make some of those protocols for myself
yeah.
and developing it.
That's so cool.
Yeah. Kind of went all over the place there.
No, I love it. I love the story. That's really, really awesome. And like the idea of like the smaller tattoo as opposed to the larger one. That's cool. Yeah, that's awesome. And you worked in, that was a tattoo shop that you started in?
Yeah.
So how many, or have you always stayed in tattoo shops, or you said you travel a lot and stuff?
No, I've always had I've always worked in a shop except for 9 months in 2018 to 19. I worked at Acadia University.
Oh, yeah.
As the coordinator of Indigenous Affairs and Student Advising. So,
wow.
like an admin role.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I've been a tattooing pirate for way too long. You know, go to work 9 to 5
yeah.
and, you know, get 4 weeks vacation.
Yeah.
You know, I had the tattoo school that year. I went to New Zealand for 2 weeks. So, you know, with the tattoo school at 6 weeks and the New Zealand trip, that'd be 6 weeks, you know,
yeah.
8 weeks or whatever. And so I was just like, nah,
yeah.
I just can't.
Can't
do
have
it.
That. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I need to go somewhere like every month. Like,
yeah, totally.
I can't have a 9 to 5.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Just responsibilities too, because you know, teaching and mentoring people in hand poke and skin stitch.
Yeah.
People are like, hey, I'm doing this thing. Do you want to come out? And I'm always like,
yeah.
But now I have more of the ability to do that.
Yeah.
But I just have to be more picky just because of the amount of work that needs to be done.
Yeah.
The amount, you know, it's cool to see how many gatherings and events there are just because, yeah, when I started, it was me and a couple other folks.
Yeah, so. That's cool. Yeah, it's really neat to see, too, how the, like, or how cultural, cultural tattoos are, like, there's so many more artists now and I think just like being able to see who's doing what on social media too is kind of cool to like to figure out like, yeah, I just go on little tangents of like looking at hashtags to see who I can find
yeah,
and
totally.
Stuff. Like, what are they up to over there?
Or, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's and that was also one of the reasons why I wanted to, you know, have a conversation with you is, you know, coming from the professional tattoo artist side and then incorporating some of that visual language from your ancestry
yeah.
is super cool, right?
Thank you. Yeah.
And also, you know, stepping into that colonial space of conventions,
yeah.
all of that type of stuff, you know, not putting down any of our non-Indigenous friends and colleagues, but, you know, sometimes those spaces aren't always what they seem and they're not always inclusive and don't always welcome.
Yeah.
A lot of people find, you know, some racism in those spots. So
yeah.
it's cool to see you taking up some of that space.
Thank you. Know? Yeah. Here I am. Yeah.
yeah.
Well, that was the thing too. Also trying to get into the industry when I was younger, it was it, like the tattoo industry itself is very intimidating. Like
yeah.
it was always scary looking dudes telling you your artwork sucked if you wanted an a critique or whatever. Yeah. But yeah, I guess just like pushing through it and being like, I'm going to be here. So
yeah, totally.
Yeah, make some room.
Yeah, and it's exciting to see the transformation of your work, you know. I look back and, you know, you did, like you said, kind of some neo-trad stuff. And then
more
black and gray.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, now that kind of that melding of those kind of two to the more beadwork, ornamental, ancestral stuff is pretty cool.
Thank you. Yeah, and that's another thing, too. Like, I do still do a fair bit of the black work type designs and stuff, or just like repeat clients coming back for similar work. And then I have started doing a lot more of the neo-trad stuff again. Like my Indigenous clients have gotten like the beadwork and then my more solid florals. And then they're like, well, I want like a bear, but can you do it like this? I'm like, yes, that's how I started.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I used to do.
Yeah.
So I've been booking a lot more of those and booking a lot larger pieces in that old style again. So it's cool how it's just kind of those styles that I've always loved. It's not that I wanted to stop doing that. It's just what you're posting at the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I like that I can go to work and not do the same thing every day.
Molding and growing.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. I'm actually moving more strictly to doing the ancestral Inca Kutmuk black stuff.
Cool.
You know, I still do some watercolor and stuff for people that are like
people you care about or
old clients.
Something to pay the bill. No,
totally. Yeah. Sometimes just doing that work that needs to be done and realizing that we can't always do exactly what we want.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Like, it is a business and you have to treat every client and collaborator with that profession.
Yeah.
So
yeah, there's a couple like rules in my submission form of things that I don't take on. Mm. And like script is one of them. But for a little bit, a couple months ago, like books were starting to slow down.
Yeah.
People were traveling again instead of just wanting to get tattooed. And I was like, oh, I might have to start doing some script. like taking whatever on. Yeah. But yeah. It's nice that sometimes you can choose what you want to do.
It was, when I always tell the, because there's two apprentices at the shop I'm at now, not my apprentices, but they're there. And so I always say, like, when I started, it was mostly script and lettering.
Yeah.
That was like the popular thing.
Yeah.
And everybody wanted it on their ribs for some
reason. Yeah.
I was just
my first tattoo was on my ribs.
I was just like, really? So, just get used to doing everything.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I've done a couple realism tiny things and then like dabbled in a couple other things, but it's nice because I know like what I'm strong at and what I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm like, let me just suggest someone who's better for this project.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
You know? So it's nice to be able to have that flexibility and not have to take on everything that walks in the door. It's,
totally. Yeah. Yeah. And I love it because it's big projects.
Yeah.
And I love it because, you know, it's connected to my ancestral's visual language.
Yeah.
You know, being able to highlight and put those forward, you know.
Yeah.
From my perspective, there's enough folks doing all that other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just me doing the work for my own community.
Yeah. That's awesome.
So, you know, bringing it forward and highlighting the brilliance and the beauty of my ancestral visual language.
Yeah. I love that.
Anything else come up for you?
Nope.
Cool. Well, I super appreciate your time.
Thank you.
I'm thankful that you took the opportunity to come and have a conversation with me.
So
you know, I hope we can do another one in the future.
Update.
Maybe totally when you open your new space.
Yeah. Awesome. I love that.
And you know, maybe at some point come and do a little documentary on you or something. I do, I'm calling them, what are they, ancestral skin markers.
That are
3 to 5 minute documentaries on Indigenous tattoo artists. So
I would love that.
And again, just lifting you up for who you are as a person and also who you are as an artist. And I would just encourage you to keep going the way that you're going because it's awesome.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Hey everyone, thanks for stopping by and taking this journey with me through this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'll just ask that you would go and subscribe if you haven't already done so. And if you have subscribed, thank you very much. I appreciate you following this journey. I just want you to remember that no matter who you are, where you're from, what you've done, or what you've been through, that you are amazing, that you are loved, and that we need you here today and going into the future so that we can transform this world for the better through our collective thoughts, actions, feelings, and our compassion for each other as human beings. Head on over to next week's episode where I'll be talking to Natalia Rojas, a Tagalog hand-tap tattoo practitioner based out of Hawaii. In this episode, we talk about Natalia's journey into learning how to use Filipino hand-tap tattoo tools. Remember, every coffee helps me to bring you the content that you love. So head over to my Ko-fi page and let's make something great together. And the last thing that I will ask you is to do me a solid and share this episode with somebody that you think will enjoy it. Thanks a lot, and see you next week.